knew he was standing on the ringing plains of windy Troy, walking the same ground as Achilles, Odysseus, Hector, and Helen. Yet at the same time, I felt I knew the setting of the Gita much more intimately than I could ever know this peaceful field. The battlefield is a perfect backdrop, but the Gita's subject is the war within, the struggle for self-mastery that every human being must wage if he or she is to emerge from life victorious. The Gita and its setting. Historians surmise that, like the Iliad, the Mahabharata might well be based on actual events, culminating in a war that took place somewhere around 1000 BC, close, that is, to the very dawn of recorded Indian history. This guess has recently been supported by excavations at the ancient city of Dwaraka, which, according to the Mahabharata, was destroyed and submerged in the sea after the departure of its divine ruler, Krishna. Only 500 years or so before this, by generally accepted guess, Aryan tribes, originally from the area between the Caspian Sea and the Hindu Kush Mountains, had migrated into the Indian subcontinent, bringing the prototype of the Sanskrit language and countless elements of belief and culture that have been part of the Hindu tradition ever since. The oldest part of the most ancient of Hindu scriptures, the Rig Veda, dates from this period, around 1500 BC, if not earlier. Yet the wellspring of Indian religious faith, I believe, can be traced to a much earlier epoch. When the Aryans entered the Indian subcontinent through the mountains of the Hindu Kush, they encountered a civilization of the banks of the Indus River that archaeologists date back as far as 3000 BC. Roughly contemporaneous with the pyramid builders on the Nile, these Indus dwellers achieved a comparable level of technology. They had metal workers skilled in sheet making, riveting, and casting of copper and bronze, crafts and industries with standardized methods of production, land and sea trade with cultures as far away as Mesopotamia, and well-planned cities with water supply and public sanitation systems unequaled until the Romans. Evidence suggests that they may have used a decimal system of measurement. But most remarkable, images of Shiva as Yogeshwara, the Lord of Yoga, suggests that meditation was practiced in a civilization which flourished a millennium before the Vedas were committed to an oral tradition. If this is so, it would imply that the systematic attitude the Indus Valley dwellers applied to their technology was applied also to the study of the mind. This was Brahma Vidya, the supreme science. Supreme because where other sciences studied the external world, Brahma Vidya sought knowledge of an underlying reality, which would inform all other studies and activities. Whatever its origins, in the early part of the first millennium BC, we find clearly stated both the methods and the discoveries of Brahma Vidya. With this introspective tool, the inspired rishis, literally seers, of ancient India analyzed their awareness of human experience to see if there was anything in it that was absolute. Their findings can be summarized in three statements, which Aldous Huxley, following Leibniz, has called the perennial philosophy, because they appear in every age and civilization. 1. There is an infinite, changeless reality beneath the world of change. 2. This same reality lies at the core of every human personality. 3. The purpose of life is to discover this reality experientially, that is, to realize God while here on earth. These principles and the interior experiments for realizing them were taught systematically in forest academies or ashrams, a tradition which continues unbroken after some 3,000 years. The discoveries of Brahma Vidya were systematically committed to memory and eventually to writing in the Upanishads, visionary documents that are the earliest and purest statement of the perennial philosophy. How many of these precious records once existed, no one knows. A dozen that date from Vedic times have survived as part of the Hindu canon of authority